people. Welcome back to the Robot Podcast. Pete Davidson here once again for the fourth time in 2 days. Oh man, some of you are probably getting sick of me. I'll do my best not to get too long-winded on this. It's probably going to be a little longer than the quarterbacks this morning, but I did give y'all a little bit of a respite on the intro, just like 20 seconds or so after torturing you with the quarterback intro this morning. Tight end is a position that yours truly sort of loves to draft. I have a little bit of a reputation, and, you know, it's well-earned. I have a tendency to go early on tight ends when I see that, or when I feel that the value is there. And this year's tight end class is, it's a little bit new. We got some new faces up at the top. You know, Zach Ertz is now sort of an established elite. George Kittle is sort of established elite. Kelsey is returning elite. Those top three guys, I mean, I've already gone on most of these guys already. I don't know if you really have to hear me talk, but look, Kelsey, I think in leagues where two tight ends are, you know, doable, where it makes sense to play a second tight end, or in a league where you're getting premium scoring for your tight end, I think he absolutely belongs in round one. In leagues where tight ends have value, but maybe not as much as in a tight end premium or a deeper league with multiple flex, I think he works well at the turn. If you play in a league where tight ends have no value, where they're single use and it's a small league, then I think he probably should creep into that second round area, maybe middle of the round. I don't think in any leagues Kelsey belongs in the third. Now, Kittle, again, horses for courses, know your league. I think he's viable in round two if your league makes tight ends valuable. Like I said, if it's a big league, if it's tight end premium scoring, I think Kittle can have viability in the second round. Normally, I think I like him early third, which is where I like Ertz as well. But let's talk about Ertz for a second, okay? I think Kittle's the number one receiver on his team. I don't think that's going to change. And I don't think there's anybody on that team that's going to force them away from him. Kittle is a guy who's so good after the catch that he could have target diminishment and still sort of put up some impressive numbers. So I'm very comfortable with Kittle. I know some people are not comfortable with Ertz. I'm not one of those people. I'm not fading Zach Ertz. Now, the fact that so many people are telling you to fade him means you may be able to get him a little cheaper in auctions, means that you may be able to target him in the early fourth versus the late third, or the mid fourth versus the mid third. We'll have to see how that sort of evolves. He is sort of, you know, going a little bit later than he was before. For me, I'm assuming full PPR. I think full PPR is sort of important, or at least 0.5. You need to get credit for receptions because Ertz is a guy who's going to rack up receptions. But I think, you know, I really do believe that this offense is going to be a hot knife through butter. And that he actually has double-digit touchdown potential this year. I also think that when you look at the epic season he had last year, it's one thing to say it's unlikely to repeat. I think that's actually true. What I don't see is major target diminishment down to, say, the level he had in 2016, 2017. I really don't see that. I think they found something with Ertz, and I don't see any reason why they would go away from it. Moreover, he's just a huge part of this offense. He's going to be on the field for about 80, 90% of the snaps. When he's out there, Wentz looks for him. And there's so much trust. Their ability to, you know, they anticipate each other's moves. So, and these guys, by the way, are very tight off the field. So I just don't see the Wentz to Ertz connection becoming less than. I just don't see it. Now, that doesn't mean you shouldn't take advantage of this situation and perhaps target him just a little later or a little cheaper in auctions and see if you can, you know, save a little money. That's great. But I anticipate Zach Ertz being at a 90 plus catch level this year. You know, it's a little bit off of last year, but, you know, again, in full PPR, that's pretty sweet. Okay, moving down the board. So we talked about, you know, the first tier. Everybody's got that same first three-man tier. And you know, I know I'm not alone going into the second tier, that we have another three-man tier. Now, this one's, you know, stretched out a little bit, but clearly these guys, to me, belong behind the top three, but well ahead of everybody else. And we're talking about O.J. Howard, Evan Engram, and Hunter Henry. I have Engram and Howard very close. I'm sort of torn in terms of who I'd rather take. Do I want the guaranteed volume of Ingram, or do I want the better offense, better quarterback, more aggressive scheme that O.J. Howard gets? I also get, in my opinion, the most talented tight end in the world with O.J. Howard. So it's a tough decision. I am just ever so slightly slightly leaning towards Howard, but it's close. You know, obviously, you know, do what makes you feel good there. But why do I love Howard? Okay, but, you know, most tight end of the world, most talented tight end of the world would be the first reason. But obviously, he's got a quarterback he's played with before. That's good. He's got a quarterback who delivers a solid ball. You know, there's, you know, Jameis Winston's problems hurt the team more than his receivers. So I'm cool with O.J. Howard from that perspective. He's clearly the stud starter on his team. He's got a guy who can get him the football. They don't really have a dominant slot on that team at this point, outside weapons. So he should be, I think, you know, a prominent factor in that middle of the field area. And then the other thing about O.J. Howard, and this is no small detail, but if you have a play caller who can really scheme, Bruce Arians, hello, he becomes a much more dangerous player to me. You know, you put O.J. Howard on the Giants, I'm definitely less excited about him because I know they're going to use him in a boring, static way. When you put him on a Bruce Arians team, Arians is going to see all the strengths in the player, and he's going to design routes and route schemes that allow this player to use his strengths. So we're going to see O.J. Howard sort of dragged underneath, and you know when the play is downfield, you're going to see little dump offs to him on third and 20 where he picks up 50 yards. He is that kind of talent. If you can give him a little ramp up, he can truck a guy. He can run away from people. This is a very unique player, and you know, is there a tiny amount of trepidation in terms of Arians and tight ends? Yeah, but you know what? I think that's overridden by the fact that Arians is a guy who generally gets the most out of his talent on hand. So I'm big on Howard. He fits the paradigm that we like to draft under here, which is take guys who can crush their draft spot. It would not surprise me one bit if O.J. Howard was a second-round pick next year. And if that if that's the way it is, well, then he had a really good year this year. Now, Evan Ingram. Love this guy, as most of my listeners know. Just incredibly underrated in terms of the amount of talent this guy has. Now, he's had some issues staying healthy. Is that something that's going to become systemic rather than just sort of random? We don't know. If you look at the injuries, there's nothing really connected to them. So I'm still very hopeful that, you know, Ingram's just had a little bit of bad luck. That play he got hurt on last year, I mean, that was, you know, no one was not going to get hurt on that play, the one near the sideline. So, and it was actually pretty athletic move on his part right before he took that hit. So I'm very bullish on Ingram as an athlete, as a tight end, as a receiver. You know, I'm not as down on the Giants quarterbacks as everybody else. I think their offensive line's actually a tad better this year. That'll help. The target should be flowing his way because obviously Odell Beckham is gone. Now Beckham doesn't tilt the field for him anymore, so he's going to have to, you know, earn the yards he gets after the catch a little bit more than before. But to me, unless the Giants are just, and when I'm saying the Giants, I don't, you know, now we're not talking about ownership and the general manager. We're talking about the coaching staff. If these guys are so dumb that they can't identify Evan Ingram as their most dangerous receiving weapon, you know, outside of potentially the running back, you know, then they're way over their heads. So I'm going to give them at least enough credit to know who their best effing player is. So to me, Evan Ingram is definitely worth being the fifth tight end taken. You know, that's easy to me. But moreover, he's the kind of player where if his own team just gets it, his ceiling is ridiculous. He's another guy who could be in like the third or second round next year if the Giants just just read the tea leaves correctly. Anyway, enough on Evan Ingram. Love him. Now, but you know what? Like, let's hit Hunter Henry, and then we're going to talk about how we're targeting these three guys. Hunter Henry, love him. Coming off a major injury, so there is that factor. Setbacks occur. Compensation injuries occur. He's a guy who's had injuries in most of the way through. But let's, you know, we didn't see his training camp injury. You know, we don't know exactly what happened. But I think, you know, I think saying Hunter Henry's had bad luck at this point is fair. I don't think we want to sit here and throw an injury, you know, you know, that he's injury prone. I don't think we want to dump that on him yet. I think it's too soon. So I've got an open mind with him. Slight downgrade because of the ACL situation. He's a little bit further down the board. Now let's talk about how we're targeting these guys. I've talked about it, and I'm overusing Sigmund Bloom's line, but it's a good one, so I'm using it. But just because I have Hunter Henry at 53 overall does not mean that's where I want to take him. That's where I have him valued. So really, that's like the earliest I'd be willing to take him, okay? Unless we're talking about some type of Uber TN, tight end premium scoring or something. So, you know, I love all three of these players, but the reality is I've been able to get, even though I have O.J. Howard in the fourth round, I've been able to get him several times in the fifth. Even though I have Ingram in the fourth, I've been able to get him in the fifth, sixth, and even seventh. And with Henry, I have yet to see him in any of the drafts that I'm in, with the exception of tight end premium. I haven't seen him go in the fifth yet. So I've got these guys ranked high. Doesn't mean you need to play it that way. Moreover, since there's three of them, it's not a bad idea to just sort of, you know, let this thing play out and then, you know, take who's there when you get to the point where you want to target. And by the way, if you miss out on all three, you don't lose the game because there's plenty of places to go down the board at tight end, which is what we're about to get into. The next guy up, Jared Cook. I know you guys are probably sick of me sort of hating on Jared Cook. And look, he's in a scheme that could absolutely unlock his career year. I don't think there's any question he is a potential stud this year. But he's also a guy who's been intermittent throughout his career. He's a guy who sort of disappears at times, doesn't always play up to his potential on a snap-to-snap basis. So, look, I'm going to be a little skeptical. I still have some Kobe Fleener redux when it comes to the Saints going out and getting tight ends. But, look, Cook was pretty good last year, got himself a better job this year. He's with Drew Brees. It's hard to see him failing. It really is. So I'm fine with Cook in this area of the draft sometime after the second big three. And right after Cook, I've got Njoku, who I think has more upside, but who's a little bit shakier in terms of floor. The reason I'm still pretty high on Njoku is it's all about Baker Mayfield and Odell Beckham. They're going to run the hell out of the ball. Beckham's going to tilt the field. Landry's going to be doing his thing. There's no way teams can do anything extra to deal with David Njoku. He's going to be out there, single coverage. And when they are able to complete the ball to him, I just think he could be exceptionally dangerous after the catch. This is a very athletic guy. I mean, you know, I think sometimes we forget about Njoku because he's been a minor disappointment so far. You know, we thought maybe he would, you know, bend the tight end curve in a new direction. Look, he was always a little bit raw, and he's been on a team that went through some sort of ugly developmental stuff over the last couple of years. Now he's in there with Baker Mayfield. He's second year in the scheme. I even if he's still developing at a slow pace, the things that he does well should be easily incorporatable into this offense from a play calling perspective, because again, you've got all these advantages. I mean, all you need to do with Njoku is get him the football in some space and let the athletic traits take over. And I think he's an effective red zone target. So to me, Njoku's got some floor to him and he's got some ceiling to him. So as long as I'm buying at a place where I'm comfortable, if I get floor, I'm cool with Njoku. I mean, I may pull him down the board a little bit. I'm not sure. You know, why do I have him ahead of Vance McDonald when a lot of people have it the other way? It's simply about injuries. I mean, I don't have a feel for whether Vance McDonald's going to be able to hold up. I really like his situation. I've been a guy who defended Vance McDonald. When there were people like 2-3 years ago saying this guy's a complete bust and a dog, I actually sat there and argued the other side. So I am not a Vance McDonald hater or anything like that. I rostered him in the fishbowl this year because of the tight end premium scoring. I was happy to take the upside. My thing with McDonald's is just basically we've never really seen this guy be an every down player over the course of a season. I have my doubts as to whether he'll be able to make it through 16 games. So I don't mind you taking Mark Andrews at ADP. Certainly don't mind you taking him where I have him ranked. But the one thing I would encourage you to do, if you go the Vance McDonald route, is, you know, if you're in a tiny league, who cares? You can go to the waiver wire and you can fix things. But if you're in a league where there's a penalty for losing your tight end, where you're going to have to go pick up, you know, some guy You know, you have to go like pick up like Jordan Thomas or Ricky Seals Jones or something. Then it's better off to get yourself a backup. Okay, that's just all I'm encouraging you to do. So if I took Vance McDonald, I would probably, you know, add. It doesn't even have to be a specific type of player. You could be Delanie Walker afterwards. It could be T.J. Hockenson. It could be Austin Hooper. Or, you know, whatever floats your boat. But I would get a plan. I'd get a plan B to Vance McDonald. Mark Andrews still holding in my 10th spot. You know, if there's no indication that they want to expand his role beyond last year, I may bump him down a little bit. I was expecting at least like a 20% expansion, but we're seeing that same paradigm where he's sort of a receiving specialist playing lower snaps than the other tight ends. He's definitely the best receiving weapon of the tight end group in terms of what they've got. But the other two guys block better, and Hayden Hurst is a pretty good receiver. You know, he may not be as exciting as Andrews, but he's pretty good. So this is something to keep an eye on. I still like Andrews as the tight end number 10 for upside if I can get him where I have him ranked. But again, this is one where I'm going to probably back myself up with another option. Delanie Walker probably ends up supplanting Andrews if everything goes well, you know, over the next week. Walker's looking pretty good. I'm on the verge. I may move those guys. I may move Walker up a couple spots, move Andrews down a couple spots, and have them right about the same area. Jordan Reed, very, very into drafting Jordan Reed right now, is like the last tight end one taken if I can get him at value. And then obviously you have to back Jordan Reed up because the injuries are, you know, they come fast and furious with Jordan Reed. T.J. Hockenson, my number one overall ranked rookie player this year, so I don't think I need to tell you guys how I feel on Hockenson any more than I already have. Obviously, I wasn't advocating that people take him number one unless you are in a league that would reward tight end scoring in a pretty strong way. I just thought he was the best player at the skill positions this year. I think he's going to be pretty much an every down tight end. I think tight end is a position where a slow-paced offense doesn't hurt you as much. Being run-based doesn't hurt you as much because it can help them spring him on defenses. I think this guy's going to catch, you know, 3 to 5 balls every week, to be honest with you. I think he's going to be really good. Now, I'm not ranking him aggressively to that level because, A, you know, we don't need to reach for this guy. He'll fall to you. B, look, no matter what I think of the player, It's still a position where development can happen slowly. They're throwing the full position at him. So, you know, him struggling week 1 and 2 when he's finally going up against non-vanilla schemes, that could happen. So he's a guy where it's like, yeah, I want him to be my tight end one, but I might not be starting him week 1. Sounds a little backwards, but whatever. I mean, obviously you do what you want, but I love this player. I think he very well could end up having a Gronk-like rookie year where people are like, oh my God, Hockenson, unbelievable. But I'm not going to put him in my lineup week 1 necessarily, you know, unless I've somehow, for some reason, left myself with no other choice. Austin Hooper, you know, he's got breakout potential. The problem there is I just can't see how he becomes higher than the third guy in the target chain, maybe even fourth, if Devontae Freeman stays healthy and they're heavily targeting him. So, you know, I like Hooper. I'm finding it hard to love Hooper. Next guy up is Kyle Rudolph, and conceivably he could maybe move up over Hooper. I'm sort of debating it. I'm not sure what Minnesota wants to do with their tight ends. If the Kubiak thing happens, then I think the tight ends are going to become more prominent, and Rudolph could be a real sleeper. So, you know, again, if, you know, you want to go Mark Andrews Rudolph, you want to go Jordan Reed Rudolph or Hockenson Rudolph, that makes some sense. Now, I'm sure some people are going like, I haven't even heard Eric Ebron's name yet. He's the next guy up. He's my tight end 16. I know that seems low for a lot of people. I just don't trust this player. He's got the same problem that Andrews has, which they don't like to put him on the field. Now, when he's on the field last year, he was targeted very heavily, but now they've got a lot more weapons. So this is my way of fading Ebron. Should I have him ranked higher? Yeah. If you want to take him at his ADP, hey, to each his own. But for me, I'm just not in the Eric Ebron business this year. Trey Burton's my next tight end. you can argue that Burton should be higher on the board. I don't have a lot of separation between Burton and, you know, say the guys at 10, 11, 12. This is a tight area of the board. You know, Chris Herndon would be in this group as well. He's the next guy up, but he's got that four-game suspension. Dallas Goedert would be way up my board, but I think he's going to be playing at that roughly 50, 60% snap rate that he saw last year, which is going to limit his upside. So back to Burton for a second. I love Trey Burton as a player. I just worry about Adam Shaheen's role growing. I worry about them playing more three wide receiver, you know, more, you know, formations where he ends up blocking. And, you know, a lot of the stuff they did with him wasn't even targeting him. They were running him on, you know, sweeps and stuff like that. So I just, I really like Burton. But I feel like there's just too many pieces there, you know, who are really talented players. I just don't feel like Burton can be consistent enough. If he was on a different team where I felt the targets were more concentrated, he could easily be up in my TE1s, easily. The next guy up on our list is a guy I know well, Chris Herndon from the Jets. I've heard in a lot of places that he's undraftable because of his suspension. That's probably true if you play in a small league. I mean, you don't need to draft Chris Herndon in a 10-team league with 15 rounds. That would be sort of silly. You definitely want to know about him. He could end up being an add at a later date. But if you're like me and most of your leagues have like 20 rounds and, you need more than one tight end on your roster, by week five, Herndon's going to be back rocking and rolling. I think he's going to be a big part of the Jets' passing game on a week-to-week basis. He's more receiver than tight end. We told you that last year before the Jets even drafted him. So to me, you know, make sure you're in on Herndon if he fits your league dynamics. If my first tight end is, say... Who's good? You know, Njoku or Jared Cook, or Hunter Henry or Evan Ingram. Really, anybody who's got a bye week, you know, after week five, Herndon's going to be an excellent replacement for your starter. So, you would lose that injury replacement capability early in the season if your starter goes down. That's true. But you know, Herndon's the kind of guy where if your starter's non-elite, he may be able to become your starter later. So, you know, call him a stash, call him whatever you want to call him. But in deeper leagues, I think this guy's very, very draftable. Now, where does he fall in the Jet pecking order? I think he probably falls somewhere between the third or fourth option. Clearly, Robbie Anderson's going to be the second option. The first option. And then, we'll have to see how the Jet offense develops. It's hard to tell exactly what their intent's going to be. I expect Crowder and Anunua to get their share. I expect Le'Veon Bell to be heavily involved. But I also expect, once he's back, I expect Herndon to be a weekly guy for the Jets. I don't think he's going to be every now and then makes a big play. I think he's going to be involved in the game plan. And I think it's also worth noting that if you watched Jet football last year, Chris Herndon was a favored target of the current quarterback. Not only did he hook up with Darnold, on a regular basis, you could see Darnold looking for him. You could see that Darnold trusted him on 50-50 balls. That's significant. Next up is Dallas Goedert, a guy who, conceivably you could take higher because of the upside in the Ertz injury scenario. I think Goedert is startable in any league on any week as a guy who could score a touchdown for you. Will he be a guy who's thumping 3, 4, 5 catches a week? I doubt it. I think he'll have some games where he makes a huge impact, and then he might have weeks where you don't see much of him at all. But the bottom line is he's a big-time red zone weapon on a team that's going to spend time in the red zone. So he's always a viable guy you can stick in your lineup. That's one of the reasons he's so high in my rankings, and then the other is that potential upside. Okay, coming up to the 20th-ranked tight end, 151 overall, is Greg Olsen. Not a guy I'm targeting just because I'm concerned he could be overtaken by the younger, probably at this point more talented Ian Thomas. Ian Thomas has had a knee. I think he's doing better. I'm probably more likely to target Thomas in a really deep tight end premium league than going earlier for Olsen personally. But the truth is, if he can be a port in the storm for you, right? If you get shut out of the tight end run, you can draft Greg Olsen. He can start for your week 1, 2, 3 for as long as he lasts. So, there's some value to him in certain situations. Jimmy Graham, next guy up. I need to get more down on the film with him. I didn't like what I saw last year. I don't know what he's going to be in this new offense. He's viable as a starter. I'm just not feeling it. I am going to try to do a film dive on him, his preseason, see how he's moving. Maybe I'll bounce him up. It's tough to judge when Rodgers isn't even playing. But Jimmy Graham's just not a guy I'm feeling at all. Jack Doyle's the next guy up. He's, you know, been unhealthy throughout the offseason. I guess he battled an oblique early. You know, with Andrew Luck's situation, it's hard to really get excited about Jack Doyle. But he is a viable player if he's going to be starting for them. We'll probably know more about Doyle in a week or so. Maybe he moves up a couple slots. But again, hard to get excited about him, particularly if it's going to be a Jacoby Brissett offense. Darren Waller's the next guy up. And now look, Waller's a guy I may sort of take out of order, you know, depending on the situation. And, you know, everybody's really high on him. He's a big name. Obviously, there's no reason not to be excited about him in the sense that, hey, this guy's an ex-receiver, but he's big. You know, if he actually makes the transition to tight end and does it effectively, he could be a real find. I don't have a problem with that. And he's stepping into, you know, Oakland's offense, where we saw what they did with Cook last year. Of course, the problem there is Antonio Brown. So, you know, if Antonio Brown flakes, who knows? Maybe Waller just via forced volume could be quite a find. So, you know, he's worth a look, and certainly I'm willing to draft him, but let's at least, you know, be upfront with this player. This guy's been in the league for a while, okay? He was drafted, like, I'm going off the top of my head, but I think 2015, you know, sort of messed around with the Ravens for a while, practice squad, got a drug suspension, so that's another thing to consider with Waller. I mean, he's flashing right now. It'd be an odd time for a drug slip up, but he does have that in his past. You know, he's not a perfect prospect. You know, if this guy was lights out, he probably, you know, would have hit with the Ravens. The Ravens are pretty good with tight ends. So there's plenty of reasons in my mind to be skeptical of Darren Waller. But by the same token, on film, from what I've seen so far, he looks pretty good. Getting out of his breaks for a big guy. You know, he's catching the ball well by all accounts. So, and he's, you know, from everything we can figure, this guy's going to be the tight end for the Raiders. So, you know, he's another guy where if you get shut out on the run, you know, you can draft this guy, play him, see what happens, and you can adjust on the fly after that. You know, I could see you going a little more aggressive with him versus the ranking I have. But, again, he's another one of these guys. If you go Darren Waller and have the idea you're going to start him, you probably want to grab one of these other veterans just so you have something stable you can fall back on. Hayden Hurst is the next guy up. If you're a Roto-Bonner, you know I'm a big fan of Hayden Hurst just as a football player. Looks like he's finally healthy. And, you know, I've said he's a two-way tight end. Whereas, you know, the guy I have higher in the rankings, Mr. Andrews, is a one, you know, note piano at tight end. He's really a receiver more so than a tight end. So it's really going to have a lot to do with Baltimore's philosophy. But as I've said all year, they value blocking at the position, probably more so than receiving at the position. So it would not surprise me if Hayden Hurst, just because he finds his way onto the field because he's a good two-way player, eventually starts developing chemistry with the quarterback. The coaches are going to gain confidence in him because now they see him healthy in preseason. They're getting a better feel for him. Hayden Hurst is a guy in a deep league, especially if it's tight end premium. I think he's worth a look late in drafts. I really do. Ian Thomas, obviously, I've been talking about this guy ever since he was drafted. Loved his film last year. I think he's a really underrated talent. But he is still stuck behind the veteran. This could be sort of an Antonio Gates, Hunter Henry kind of scenario where we're sort of getting frustrated on both ends. I'm not targeting Thomas outside of big tight end premium leagues, but it's important that we know if something happens and all of a sudden this guy's starting, he's like a run to the freaking computer and pick him up guy, because he could be a monster. I mean, he could really be a monster. This guy's talented. Noah Fant, a rookie who I think has a lot of rookie stuff. I think the more they want him to play tight end, the more the transition's going to slow down for him. I don't anticipate a big rookie breakout, but it's not impossible. It's not impossible. So, you know, he's up here. Not a guy I'm targeting. Probably more of a guy that I want to just monitor and maybe go after in free agency if it's merited. Next up is Tyler Eifert. And maybe I need to bump Eifert up over Fant. You know, the thing is, Fant, I trust to stay healthy. Eifert, I mean, I don't trust this guy to get through a game. So, you know, and as I mentioned on the podcast with Hacksaw, you know, a couple weeks ago, Eifert's become more like a legend. I mean, I understand the statistical impact that he's been able to make, but how many times has this guy been in the field the last couple of years? So, I just don't buy that he can stay healthy. You know, is he worth a look? He's sort of like Waller and some of these other guys in that, yeah, if you're in a jam and he's healthy when you're drafting, you can sort of pencil him in as your week one starter and, you know, ride him while you can. It's not the worst idea. But, man, you better have a plan B. And if you're in a league that doesn't have any quality free agents on the wire, you better have a plan B on the roster. Next up is Mike Gesicki, a guy who I've never really been particularly fond of because I just don't think he's a very good two-way player. And, you know, now he's on Miami where I think they want two-way tight ends. But rumor is that they're using him as a pure receiver. If that happens, the guy does run decent routes. He's got really good hands. So, you know, I think he's worth a look in deeper leagues. Roster him, see how it plays out the first couple weeks. I think there's some upside there. I'm not real optimistic, but I think certainly conceivably this guy could break out and become a catch-first tight end. So, worth taking a look at him early and seeing how it breaks out. Jason Witten up at 29. I thought this guy was pretty washed the last time we saw him, so I don't know what really he can do after a year layoff. To me, he's probably fourth in the pecking order. He's a guy you can throw in there and get some stats. He probably has a little bit of a floor to him. But again, I just didn't think he looked that great to me the last time he was playing, and that was, 2017. So I'm not real bullish on Witten. Adam Shaheen next up. I love him for upside. He may just be a role player. He has been a little injury prone. He's not a guy you can depend on. Obviously, he's down this far on the board. But in a deep league, particularly if it's tight end friendly or tight end premium, this is a guy I think who's got a lot of upside. I mean, like Adam Shaheen is the kind of guy where if for some reason Burton got hurt or if they decided to shove him in certain formations where they were using Burton, I mean, if this guy were to hit, he could be a TE1. I mean, he really could. So, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I think the upside for Adam Shaheen is there. So he's the kind of guy I like to have on the end of my bench early in the season, just in case I underestimated his role, I could really have something. But then if things are sort of as is, he's a guy I might be able to move on from as well. But again, upside ceiling. This guy's got it. He's a freak. Dawson Knox has been battling injuries, but apparently he's getting healthy now. The Bills need a tight end option. I really like this guy. He's a talented player. Again, rookie tight end curve, always an issue. But in a deep league, last round, 20th round, Dawson Knox could be somebody to look at. Right now, I think he's more on the bubble, but I'm going to try to get a look at him week three and see what we see if he's actually playing. Josh Oliver, I love Josh Oliver. I think he's got all kinds of ceiling. Unfortunately, he's dealing with a hamstring injury, and he's not even locked to play week one, although it sounds like he could be back at practice within the next week. So I wish we could get a look at him actually playing football for the Jags. He may just be a guy to think of as a priority waiver guy. I'm not sure yet. Probably not going to be a guy we're targeting late, but definitely a guy on the radar all the time, because if this guy hits, he could hit really big. He's got all kinds of different skills, and I think he would actually fit really well with Nick Foles. So we'll just have to see how this plays out, but he's a guy, just sort of keep in your mind. Patriots, we'll have to see which tight end is really going to be the guy. Obviously, Watson's got some stuff early in the season. LaCosta's dealing with an injury. Right now, I'm sort of off these guys. That could change. Seals Jones is next. I'm off all the Arizona tight ends at this point. Now, let's just move down the board and see, is there anybody left with some upside that we want to talk about? One guy, I think, who we want to just sort of keep tabs on, I don't think he's really a draft target, is Irv Smith Jr. Now, if something were to happen to Rudolph, this guy could smash. I think he's generally underrated in terms of how good he is. So Irv Smith Jr. on the Vikings, I think he's a guy you want to be ready to add if there's an injury. Both of the tight ends on Houston, three of the tight ends on Houston, when you get right down to it, you've got Jordan Akins, you've got Jordan Thomas, and then you have the rookie, Cahill Waring. So one of these guys could, if one of these guys emerges as the guy who's playing all the snaps, he could have, some real fantasy viability. So I want to keep my, keep tabs on the situation in Houston and see if somebody really emerges there. Three other guys I want you guys to sort of keep tabs on, okay? Actually, four. One is Elise Mack. I'm going to do a dive and see what the buzz is on him. I haven't heard a lot about him, but I love his talent. If something were to happen to Jared Cook. Elise Mack, you never know. This guy has got all kinds of ability. He's a bit of a head case. You know, there's reasons to be wary of him. But you know what? If it's seasonal and for some reason he's moving into the starting role, could be a monster with Drew Brees throwing him the ball. So something to think about. Janu Smith is a guy I really like if he's getting the snaps. Obviously, he won't unless something happens to Delanie Walker. But he'd be like an immediate run to grab him kind of pickup. And then in a similar kind of sense, I think Sigmund Bloom mentioned this guy on the pod the other day. But Xavier Grimble, on the tight end on Pittsburgh. Now, we talk about how... or I talk about how injury-prone Vance McDonald's been over the years. Well, if it happens, Grimble's your guy. Now, if you play in a really super deep league, like a 14-teamer with 25-man rosters, and some of you guys are like, what's Pete talking about? I actually play in a fair number of these types of leagues. You could actually draft Grimble. Like, if you lean in and take McDonald early and tight ends are getting snatched up due to premium scoring or whatever, you just grab Grimble late and you protect yourself. The last guy I'm going to talk about is a guy I actually wrote a pretty long article on recently, Blake Bell. He's not draftable, and I doubt Blake Bell's going to do anything this year because Kelce is the man. But if Mr. Kelce were to go down, Blake Bell would be a run to the waiver wire and grab type player. He's a good football player. Andy Reid picked him up because he knows how to block. I think that probably had a lot to do with it. But if you put him in that scheme with all the speed around him, the defenses are going to forget about Blake Bell, and he would probably end up catching 4 or 5 balls a week. And he's pretty good athlete after the catch. He'll truck some guys, knock some people down, and he can catch a touchdown. So, nobody even knows who Blake Bell is. I get it. But just, keep in the back of your head, particularly if you're a Kelce guy, that if something happens to Kelce and he's going to be out for a period of time, you could probably replace him, on a C or D level with Blake Bell. That's going to do it for the tight end portion of this podcast, and it's going to do it for today's audio content. You can probably hear it. I'm getting a little hoarse. Going to rest my voice a little bit, come back strong tomorrow. There will be a rankings update later on today. The cheat sheets will get updated with the rankings. By the time this podcast is posted, that may already be done. And again, next week we got a lot of good stuff coming. Martin Frank, Eagles beat writer, is going to be on Wednesday. Lord Reeves on Tuesday. Really looking forward to that as well. And man, it's drafting season. I got a big auction coming up this weekend. I'm hosting a bunch of my really good friends. Can't wait. We're going to drink a lot of beer, eat a lot of meat, draft a lot of fantasy football players, and just, general stupidity will occur, without question. It's my favorite day of the year. Jimmy Hackett will be down here and a bunch of my other good friends, so really can't wait. And so at this point, we're done. And look, a short podcast. We're going to come in under 40 minutes. You got to love that. As I said, tomorrow is draft plan day. I'll be back. Hopefully you guys can, glean a little more out of that, get a little bit more ready for your drafts. And the board is really starting to feel good to me now. I'm starting to feel good about where we're at. I'm psyched that my big drafts are still to come. Hopefully you guys are in that same situation. So, thanks for listening. See you tomorrow, and, giddy up, drafting season, baby. That's a problem.